The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of the show, you're free to do so. Just send us an email so we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop. Before we do the main segment of this show, I wanted to do some announcements regarding the prison strike. But honestly, so many amazing things have been going on, it would be impossible to do them justice in the time we have for this show. But in brief, I would like to say that at Holman Prison in Atmore, Alabama, where many rebels are part of the Free Alabama movement, it was reported a few days ago that most, if not all, of the prison guards there had quit their jobs, either giving their notice or walking off entirely in solidarity with the strikers. This is a huge piece of news, and I'm not aware of it ever happening before on such a large scale. If anybody is, please shoot us an email at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. It was also announced the other day that prisoners in Korydallos, Greece, had joined the strike and refused to let guards lock them up and refused to go to their jobs. This is also a tremendous piece of news, and it is clear that the prison strike is still going strong, though it should come as no surprise that it is being quelled in mass media, which have even reported that it has fizzled out. The opposite is true. Keep your eyes on It's Going Down, support Prisoner Resistance, Mass Magazine, and the Portland Anarchist Black Cross, among other anarchist news sources, for more real updates. You can also help by writing to those who have been targeted in this strike, and you can find a list of prison rebels on the IWOC page at iwoc.noblogs.org. In this episode, we are presenting two segments. Firstly is a conversation recorded with Keith from Atlanta Antifa about the fast-approaching occurrence of Hammerfest, which is a far-right music festival, which is suspected to be taking place in Draketown, Georgia, about an hour outside of Atlanta. In this interview, we speak about how ATL Antifa got started, whether or not Trump's presence on the political stage has emboldened the far right and white supremacist activity, some vague tactical advice for dealing with suspected far right activity, police ties with the KKK, some history about and advice about dealing with Hammerskins, some other struggles that are going on in Atlanta and the surrounding towns, and much more. To get in touch with them, visit asainatl.wordpress.com, or you can get super current updates on their Twitter at asainatl. The second segment is a short interview with a member of the organizing committee for the upcoming Anarchist Black Cross Conference. In this conversation, we talk about the history of the ABC, how the prison strike is informing this year's conference, and much more. But first, before that, here are some words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain. What you say, what you say, what you say,
what? Record like a bomb! I know I sound like a broken record, so I have to apologize in advance. But I'm back on the topic of cops shooting black people. It feels like deja vu all over again, and again, and again. This situation really sucks. Like being totally helpless as we watch people strapped in like crash dummies and then slammed into the bricks over and over and over. And there's nothing that any of us can say or do to stop it. It's just an ongoing atrocity, a mass grave filled in installments. And yet there's constant backlash, a barrage of denunciations from all corners every time somebody suggests that possibly, just possibly, anti-cop violence might be the answer. In conversations on this topic in the mainstream media, I hear thoughtless platitudes and silly sound bites asserting that two wrongs don't make a right and that violence discredits protesters. What planet are we on? Sometimes two wrongs do make a right. If someone steals my car and I steal it back, two wrongs have made a right. But beyond that, I don't need the jerk who stole my car hiding behind some inapplicable moral posturing in order to continue screwing me. As for violence discrediting protesters, that kind of reasoning says that a rape victim struggling against the rapist is somehow discredited by recourse to violence. Nonsense. And to anyone offended by my analogy, I would like to quote one of my personal heroes, Ward Churchill, the smartest specimen currently on 2 feet, when he equated rape to colonization. He said, "If rape is violence, as feminists correctly insist, then so too is the interculture analog of rape, colonial domination." Now, in our current reality, I think it's a no-brainer that blacks are subjected to colonial domination, the interculture analog of rape, and cops are the sex organ of the colonial dominator. So let's do a quick exercise. Let's depersonalize the situation and analyze it objectively. We won't talk about cops and black people. We'll talk about Group C and Group B. In our analogy, Group C, over the course of decades, is involved in butchering Group B. Group B objects, but Group C always has an excuse, blaming the victims of Group B for their own deaths. But recently, video demonstrates that Group C really butchers Group B, and that Group C routinely lies about it. The general public concludes we need a national dialogue that never happens. Group C continues butchering Group B. Group B holds hands and sings Kumbaya. Group B seeks nonviolent solutions. Group C continues butchering Group B. Group B and co-conspirators burn down a convenience store and tip over Group C's cars. The public calls on legislation to make Group C wear body cameras. And public consensus is that Group B's violence is not the solution. Group C continues butchering Group B. Finally, after a death toll of thousands and a high-profile situation, a sniper from Group B shoots and kills 5 members of Group C. Again, the public condemns violence. For a short time, Group C suspends its butchery of Group B. But just for a short time. Then the butchery continues, and the general public throws up its hands, totally befuddled as to what could possibly save Group B from the genocide committed by Group C. But the general public is convinced with unyielding certitude that violence is not the answer for Group B. Do you see what I'm getting at here? It's clearly a pathology in thinking, a kind of mental illness to think of Group C, cops, and their violence as something other than violence. Cops killing black people is violence. It's also a clear pathology in thinking, a kind of mental illness to continue viewing this deplorable situation as something it is not. Not only is anti-cop violence the solution, but it is provably the solution. Anti-cop violence in Dallas resulted in a temporary moratorium on the genocide cops commit against black people. Very possibly, in killing 5 cops, that sniper in Dallas saved dozens or even hundreds of black lives. It is a pathology, a mentally ill message, to continue falsely harping that violence is not the answer, when it is. Anyone saying violence is not the answer is either a liar, an idiot, or a whack job. I'm not voicing an opinion here. I'm saying that objectively, to really save black lives, the solution is anti-cop violence. Shooting cops is provably the only way to get the cops to stop shooting black people. Period. No justice, no peace. F*** the police. Rebels in Charlotte Rock. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Warren Correctional in Lebanon, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at SeanSwain243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org. So the first question I have is, would you care to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do?
Well, my name is Keith, and I have been involved politically for a pretty long time. I was a member of Love and Rage back in the late 80s, early 90s, specifically through the Anarchist Youth Federation, which was a branch of that. And through that, I got involved because I was already had already decided through the punk scene that we had a lot of problems with the Nazis coming to shows and coming to the areas that we hung out in. And so basically, you know, the crew that I hung around in, we had started organizing against the Klan and Nazis, and through that met people who were politically active and got involved in, you know, in other politics. And I've been involved in a lot of different stuff, but what I'm doing now mostly is the boring stuff that Antifa has to do, which is, you know, physical verifications of the individual members that we're running across and other information that we're gathering, and basically just gathering info and intel at this point in time.
Were you involved in Love and Rage in Atlanta, or were you involved in like New York City or another city?
Atlanta. We had our AYF chapter was directly connected to them, so directly connected to the local Love and Rage chapter. And this was the Federation the network before the Federation. So.
Oh, okay. Cool. As far as I was wondering if you talk a little bit more about the boring side of Antifa, like you said, like what does that exactly entail? Is it just like doxing people, but just verifying their identities and like making sure that they're really fascists?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that. You know, you find people that are showing up at rallies and trying to figure out who they are. These days, it's a little easier with social media because, you know, not everybody, you know, is exceedingly careful about what they do online. But, you know, it comes down to, like, you know, verifying whether if they're actually a member of a group, whether if they're a supporter of a group, or if they're just an independent, where they're actually active, who they're connected to. Like I said, it's not exactly glamorous work.
But, like, really important. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to get in the face of the wrong person. So I think that kind of footwork is always super crucial in activism and in these kinds of things in general. Speaking of Antifa, how did Atlanta Antifa get started, and what sorts of projects does the group typically engage in?
So it got started this time around with as specifically as Atlanta Antifa was during organizing for the Rockstone Mountain counter protest for April 23rd, where the Klan and neo-Nazis were threatening to march or rally at Stone Mountain. And so it was a few of us that connected during that through working through All Out Atlanta and, you know, just doing various different work around that, you know, getting flyers out, et cetera. And realizing that we needed to have an actual presence, like a maintained presence for anti-fascist and anti-racist activity in Atlanta and in Georgia, basically Atlanta is what most people remember about Georgia anyway, because it's like it's a sprawling area. So we started basically with asking ourselves, what do we do after April 23rd? You know, and I think most people are familiar with what happened in Stone Mountain with the protests that happened against the Klan there. But, you know, some of us decided, well, we needed to continue. And so we just started doing research. I mean, we are, and one of the people that's involved with us was already doing this research to begin with. So it just became a natural expression of, like, you know, people who are already doing this work coming together and starting to, you know, work together. And now the hard part of, like, trying to find, you know, get more people active and mobilizing people to do things and provide information, et cetera.
Do you generally find that folks in Atlanta are friendly toward anti-fascist initiatives, I would say?
It's hard because pretty much until last year, we really hadn't been seeing a lot of this activity very frequently. ever since, you know, the Klan and the Nazis got their back broken in the South back in the early 90s. And so Atlanta just didn't really see this kind of activity that we're seeing specifically in like northern Georgia and whatnot, and in the surrounding areas outside of Atlanta now. So I think a lot of people don't see a purpose in what we're doing sometimes because they don't really see it as a threat, because they don't see it like we did. Like when I first got involved, it was something that we had to deal with on a daily basis, you know. And so we're at a point where we kind of have to basically put the spotlight on the on these things that are happening to let people know that, look, you can't just ignore this. And there, you're able to ignore it because it's happening outside the city and you don't really go outside the city that often. But, you know, and it's not happening inside. But, you know, there are a lot of concerns, especially amongst the Black and Latino populations that are here. And, you know, with these things happening, like we had the rumor of Klan flyering at Piedmont Park where a man was found hanged. But, I mean, again, that became a rumor. We hadn't been able to confirm because the only thing we could get out of that was that the person who had posted it on Twitter and was posting a flyer from somewhere in Virginia at the time.
Holy
shit. So, well, I mean, I don't know if they were, it wasn't anything intentional. I think it was that there was this rumor, this happened, you know, they put this up there saying that it would have looked like this. And that's kind of what their post said. But I think people kind of just ran with it because, you know, everything can be kind of, you know, a telephone game. So you have to, like, that's part of why we do research, is so that we can actually, you know, have verification. Yes, this happened. Yes, these are the people involved, and these are things that you can do about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's so, so real to come up against a sort of opinion that maybe the Klan and fascism in the United States is this like kind of empty threat, or sort of, you know, this marginalized identity that like is not now and has never been really been a threat. And I think that there's this sort of miasmic view of what the Klan is and what it could be and what it has been. So I think that I've heard basically in different words, like what you just said, come out of a lot of Antifas around, especially the South, or like, you know, especially the South and the Northwest being like, yeah, people don't really get that this could really be a problem, and so it's a really good idea to keep an eye on it, and especially now with, I guess, the current political situation, it's being said that Trump's presence is emboldening fascists. What do you think about that? Is that a real thing, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it's more complicated than that, but his rhetoric has led a lot of people to, like, you know, we've all heard it. You know, he says, you know, people say like, oh, you know, he's not afraid to speak his mind. Well, okay, so he's not afraid to say racist shit. And therefore that means that does embolden like general population of like, you know, especially when you hear a lot of like the anti-PC rhetoric coming out of people of like, you know, and not that there's not issues with politically correctness to some degree, but like, what's really being said when people are attacking that is that they're really saying it's okay for me to be racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, whatever. And I should be completely okay and not be challenged for it. And it becomes a bigger issue because when you have a social situation that makes these ideas acceptable and it allows them to breed, then you have a breeding ground for more organized presences, like, you know, the Klan being able to step in. Like one of the big things we've seen happen across the South is the Loyal White Knights targeting rural communities with anti-trans and gay flyers, very specifically targeting trans folks and gay folks, and basically telling people that it's, you know, these are bad people that they're not going to stand for, and that they should join them so that, you know, they can find whatever ways that they can deal with it, right? And so we look at Trump and what's going on, and you can look at Matthew Heimbach from the Traditional Workers' Party. Before that, he was a part of the Traditionalist Youth Network, and before that, the White Students Union. And I mean, he was found on video attacking a woman in one of the Trump rallies. He's going to these rallies, and he was going to the rallies and actually engaging people there and trying to spread his politics amongst that crowd. And he wasn't being run off by them, so he obviously had some acceptance. So, you know, we find that the far right, especially the racialist right, has found a home within it because they're not being challenged there, and they're even being accepted to some degree, at least.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for talking about that. That's all like super thought-provoking for me. Apart from the things that you have mentioned before, like the person flyering in that park and the transphobic and homophobic rhetoric, what kind of would you talk a little bit more about fascist or maybe suspected fascist activity in Atlanta? What further sorts of things have y'all been seeing, and what are the most effective sort of tactics against fascists that you've seen so far?
Well, so in the city, in Atlanta proper, the only thing we've been really seeing is a man by the name of Patrick Sharp, who was organizing a white students union at Georgia State University. That has been relatively unsuccessful for him. But every time he's popped up, he's been able to grab some headlines here and there. And the first time he showed up, it was just him. The second time he showed up, he had 3-4 other people with him. So he seems to be building a base, you know, a little clique of folks to work with. And if the next time he shows up, he has 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, you know, we'll see that he's actually basically organizing. And we can put more pressure on him. There was a lot of pressure put on by student groups there at Georgia State University. And I can't really say that they were overall extremely effective. They basically kind of ran him into hiding the first time. The second time, I think he kind of went and he kind of decided to pull back because he was able to just do what he wanted and, you know, make the point that he wanted and then just kind of disappear. Other than that, we've mainly been seeing stickering from Identity Europe stuff in the city, which is an alt-right organization or group that definitely has fascist ideas. But we basically, all we do is we take down their stickers and we put up ours locally. But we haven't really figured out exactly who the people involved are. We believe we know who one of them is. And we maybe correct in assuming that it might only be that person, but we don't have the proof yet at this point in time. So we're not really focusing on that as much. It's just that when we see the flyers, we pull them down, the stickers, we pull them down and, you know, put up other stuff in its place. In Georgia, we've seen a rise in Klan activity. Both the International Keystone Knights of the Ku Klux Klan just tried to have a rally in Rockmart, Georgia, which is actually getting ready to, it's supposed to be this weekend, the same weekend as Hammerfest. And we've been seeing the Loyal White Knights, who work specifically with the National Socialist Movement, who they seem to be the Klan group that's growing the most. They seem to have a lot of support, at least as far as like maybe monetary backing or material support that allows for them to do what they've been doing. And we know of them being active in at least 3 towns. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, when you're thinking about, like, the fact that 3-4 years ago, they didn't really exist at all here, it shows that they've got a trend of, you know, growing membership if they can call, you know, say that they have locals in 3 different areas. The Rockmart stuff with the IKK, we put a lot of pressure on, well, we tried to put a lot of pressure on the local police department and city, but we got stonewalled by them saying, you know, of course we got the free speech talk from them about like, it's their right to protest, organize, rally, whatever. But they didn't inform the community at all that this was going to happen. It was in a public park. They were utilizing the entire park, which would mean they were really resegregating the park, turning this public park into a whites-only area. So we kept pushing that. And eventually, I think we put enough visibility on it by getting some publicity that one of the main organizers pulled out off the, you know, decided he wanted to sign off of the permit, which then got, once he pulled out of the permit, then the city had to cancel the event. So it's not, you know, the grand, glorious, you know, win there, but at least it happened, you know. At least we were able to get a confirmation that they were, that their event was canceled and they're not supposed to rally. We will have people there checking to see if they show up anyway.
Certainly. Yeah, this question of grand victories is maybe one that's more limiting than anything else. I think that it's a fine thing to cancel a Klan rally or to, like, even hear about it. Also, like, when you were talking, I was thinking about police, how do I want to say this, like, police sympathy, seeming police sympathy with far-right and Klan activity. There's this notion within anarchism that it's a thing, or like that the police are really on the Klan side. And sometimes I really like think that that's true. And sometimes I worry that that's conspiracy theory thinking. And maybe the two are, you know, very much related or whatever. But what is your take on that?
Well, historically, it's been true. It may not have been so total that like every police department was still with Klansmen, but I mean, there's a reason why the slogan "Blue by Day, White by Night" came about. I mean, now it's kind of harder to say, because even in rural Georgia, there's black police officers, and getting into a discussion with them about white supremacy and how they are propping it up is not exactly an easy discussion to have, because police are completely authoritarian to begin with, and pretty much if you tell any black police officer that he's basically a Klansman, you're probably going to not find yourself on his happy side. But that being said, I don't think it's necessarily a conspiracy theory. I mean, we can look at, there was a trend with the white nationalist movement for them to get into positions of authority, to have, you know, to get in, to join the fire department, to join the police force, to become paramedics and EMTs, to join the military. They've actually, for more organized groups, encouraged their members to get into these positions, right? And so I think it can be a very real problem. And the best way to deal with that is literally to find out these people who are involved and out them and have them lose their job. Luckily, it seems to be throughout the United States, there's been one or two of them who have made really idiotic, like social network posts and gotten themselves fired and just done it for us. But, you know, some of them aren't that stupid. And so we have to kind of put again, it's about doing the research and figuring out who's who and who's doing what.
Certainly. So you mentioned Hammerfest a little while ago, and that is sort of the reason why we at The Final Straw reached out to y'all to talk about fascist activity in Georgia. Would you talk a little bit about Hammerfest? What is this event for listeners who haven't heard about it? And can you give a bit of information about the Hammerskins?
Sure. So Hammerfest is one of their music festivals that they have. And they have different events across the nation and in other countries where the Hammerskin Nation has chapters. These events end up being not just places for them to go and see what are, you know, neo-Nazi aligned bands, but also, you know, basically rock against communism bands. And they also ends up being a gathering point for them to organize and whatnot. Like, so Hammerfest here, which is being held, and we're pretty certain that it's in Draketown, Georgia, which is, there's a bar there called the Georgia Peach, which has hosted it multiple times since the 90s, as well as Klan rallies there. It's not just the Hammerskins that are there. They're expecting to have the National Socialist Movement there. Matthew Heimbach from the Traditionalist Workers Party is supposed to be one of the speakers. He's on their flyer saying he's coming to speak to them. They're working with many different groups, so there'll be representatives of, you know, the Loyal White Knights there. And I guess now maybe the International Keystone Knights will be there if they're not having their event in the park. And they use these events not only as, you know, a place to have fun, but it's where they literally network with each other. Now, the Hammerskin Nation is a, and in the South, their branches are called the Confederate Hammerskins. They're a National Socialist skinhead gang. They might like to view themselves as like some kind of grand political party or some shit, but they're just a gang. They even work through a gang. That's how they organize. They have prospect members who, you know, have to do X, Y, and Z before they can become full-fledged members. And it's just like a biker gang. So we call it for what it is. They're a gang. They tend to be violent. Many of them have assault records, you know, criminal records filled with assaults. And oftentimes, my experience through the years has been that, especially in the South, the Hammerskins are their own biggest enemy. But they're not to be underestimated for what they can do. One of the reasons I believe that they're really trying to pull this off is a former ally of theirs who was in the National Alliance named Chester Doles is now able to associate again with these groups. He got out of jail not too long ago, and I believe he was quiet until like just the last year or so. So I'm assuming that he had some kind of probationary restriction of being able to associate with these groups for a while, and now that's cleared up. I mean, we don't know for certain. That's my guess, because he just seems to have shown up out of the blue. And he, in the past, organized white power music festivals in Georgia, specifically with the Hammerskins.
And did they originate in the UK, or are the Hammerskins like a United States phenomenon?
They're a U.S. phenomenon. They actually started in Dallas, Texas in 1988.
Damn. And you mentioned that the Hammerfest is going to be in Draketown, Georgia. How far away from that is that from Atlanta?
It's about an hour. It's in a little unincorporated town that has a long history of Klan activity as well.
Gotcha. Damn. Would you care to talk about the resistance that is happening against this event?
I'm going to be kind of honest about this.
Sure.
Mainly we're monitoring because we're not at a capacity to actually do much as far as like a full on resistance to it. That stated, we do have plans on how to deal with this. And what we're more interested in doing is making sure things remain okay in the city in case they decide to make forays in. We have a section of town here that used to be contested territory between anti-racists and neo-Nazis back in the late 80s and early 90s. And it's possible they might try to, you know, come and make a show of like, ha ha, we're here again. So on top of that, the only other thing I know is that a group of anonymous folks decided to call for a protest outside of the club where it's going to happen. I don't really know much more about that or even how that's going for them.
For sure. I personally would not be sad to see a protest, though I would be super sad to see anti-fascists get seriously hurt. And I know that the Hammerskins have a, like you said before, a reputation for extreme violence. Like they do carry knives, a lot of them carry guns, and like you said, a lot of them have assault records for what that's worth. And I would urge anyone to be super 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 careful if they are wanting to engage in something like that. But is there any solidarity that you're hoping to see from out-of-towners?
So that one's the hard one, right? I had to think about this, and like, as far as what's going on currently, you know, we would like for people to pay attention, you know, to just be aware. One of the things that we actually did ask for one of our call-outs was that we wanted people to literally target their white nationalist community in their area, and especially if they had Loyal White Knights, NSM, or Hammerskins in their area, to do anything they could to hinder them, to make sure that they had a harder time being able to come here. Like, whatever tactics that people wanted to use and utilize, great. If it just ended up being information sharing, we would like that too. We want to make as many connections with these, you know, about these people as possible. So, you know, someone's in Louisville, Kentucky, and they've got information about like the Hammerskins there or the NSM, wherever, sharing information with us and finding, and if they have connections with people here, then we share that information with them too, to know like how they're flowing, you know, and how they're organizing and who they're talking to. And that way it makes it, you know, easier for us to determine basically who their leadership is, you know, who's the ones that are getting, you know, that are talking to each other. And if we can find ways to hinder their ability to do that, then we're effectively kind of shutting down their organizing capacity. And that's what really needs to be done. So solidarity wise, pay attention and see if anything happens. If we have a call out for, you know, help with anything, like say if the anonymous folks do go there and something happens, we're going to help with whatever we can to, you know, if someone gets hurt or even spread the word in case they pull something amazing off. I mean,
nice.
But you know, we don't know. Some of us will be there in some capacity because we do monitor events. So we have to go and see what's going on.
Is there a good way for people to get in touch with y'all or to learn about stuff that y'all are contending with?
Yes. So we have an actual WordPress blog where we put a lot of our research and information that we're putting out. And that is asainatl.wordpress.com. And we also have a Twitter account, which is just AFAINATL.
Awesome.
We have an email and phone number for people to contact if they want. Those can be found on the website. So I mean, it's not hidden information.
Are there any other events that ATL Antifa is focusing on that are coming up in the next little while?
So we're working on something. Apparently NSM is gathering kind of regionally in Rome, Georgia in November to travel to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for a protest that they're doing up there. And we're discussing what to do about their local gathering at this point in time. It might just be that we gather information and monitor as they get on their bus and go or whatever they're doing. The League of the South had a protest coming up on October 8th, but it's already been canceled. We didn't have anything to do with it, unfortunately. But it was literally canceled as quickly as it was announced. The other thing that we have going on is the, which we haven't actually dealt with directly yet, but we're reaching out. There's a mosque that's being built in Noonan County, and they're getting resistance from the community with the 3% militia folks specifically coming out there and railing against them. And so we're reaching out to the folks from the mosque to see how we can help them. And there's always more going on too that we haven't even uncovered at this point in time. So
yeah. I wonder, like, it just occurred to me to ask you your opinion on like, it seems fascist activity is sort of on some kind of upswing. Do you see anti-fascist activity on a similar upswing, or does it have some ways to go?
I think it has some ways to go, but it's definitely on the upswing. I mean, I think folks are realizing that, and with the political climate, you know, with people obviously being drawn to fascism, obviously others will be, you know, it's a polarizing effect. So other people will be drawn to the anti-fascists. It seems to be that we're more in response mode, but we're hopefully in the next few months or a year, we'll see that we're able to set the pace and it's not the fascists that are doing it.
Certainly. And that event in Harrisburg that you mentioned, that wouldn't be was that going to be the November 5th? Was it National Socialist Rally? Okay, gotcha.
It's a National Socialist Movement. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. That is all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Thank you for asking us to do this. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really have anything right offhand.
Gotcha. Well, it's been a total pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for taking time and coming on the air and speaking about all of these things.
You're welcome.
That was our interview with Keith from ATL Antifa. Again, to get in touch with them, you can visit their website at asainatl.wordpress.com, where you can call them or write to them and keep in touch with what is going on in Atlanta. We will have our interview with the North American Anarchist Black Cross conference organizer after this brief musical break. Shout out to Asheville Anti-Racism, who suggested I play this song, which is the Ramones' Bonzo Goes to Bitburg. The first question is, would you care to talk a little bit about where you live and organizing there and a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So I organize with several chapters of the Anarchist Black Cross, and I'm on the organizing committee for the North American Anarchist Black Cross Conference that's coming up. And I'm part of a larger collective, and we do all sorts of things. We give, you know, material support directly to political prisoners and help with politicizing prisoners. And we also do a bit of community work trying to link the struggles of police brutality and gentrification with the bigger prison and surveillance state that we live in.
That's awesome. What does the process? I have two questions going off that. What is the process by which you like aim to link like gentrification and police brutality to the PIC? Is it more like teach-ins and educational stuff, or do you have other tactics that you employ to further that aim?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in terms of education. I think the biggest thing is just sort of rhetorically inserting these struggles and linking them together just by either, you know, writing short essays or sort of just discussing with anyone and everyone how these struggles are linked, and also sending in like a diverse array of materials to people on the inside as well, so that they can, you know, see how the fight is going down on the streets. But I think that a lot of people, at least the ones I'm exposed to, are very receptive to this kind of linking of messages. So it seems to be successful so far.
Definitely. And you mentioned having like a loose aim to politicize prisoners. Do you do so by sending materials into prison?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, several of us will, you know, send in political pamphlets. Some of us have even created unique prisoner publications to send in, some of them explicitly anarchist, some of them explicitly for women prisoners and trans women, and then some of them that are more regionally focused to sort of highlight the issues going on in those regions. And so, yeah, a lot of this is, you know, directly created and emerging out of people who've been doing prisoner support work for a long time. And then some of it is just, you know, the regular old zine trade and trying to get in different materials to the folks that we correspond with on the inside.
So you mentioned the ABC conference happening in Denver in, I think it's mid-October, is that right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Would you talk a little bit about the Anarchist Black Cross? Could you tell listeners what it is, and do you know how it began, or like a rough history of the Anarchist
Sure.
Black Cross?
Yeah, sure. So the Anarchist Black Cross is an international organization, and there are chapters, you know, across the globe and in the U.S. In many different locales. And each Anarchist Black Cross often has a different focus or an aim, sometimes just rooted in the problems in their local communities. But oftentimes they take the shape of supporting any one of the 100 political prisoners that are listed as political prisoners. And so that means that there are letter writing nights that take place. Folks will put money on some of these prisoners' books. Sometimes political prisoners will call in to conferences or to the conference, in fact, which I'll talk about in a second. And so there's, you know, a sort of amplification of political prisoners' voices. And yeah, that's essentially what folks do. Also, some Anarchist Black Cross chapters support resistance and different protests that are happening in their cities. And so they might start, you know, a legal line or create different bail funds for people who get arrested at actions. And so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that they do. And the history of it, it started in Tsarist Russia in 1907, when a lot of political folks and specifically anarchists were experiencing repression and, you know, either being killed, murdered for their political beliefs, or were, you know, sent into exile in Siberia. But anyways, it, you know, started as a response to that, to sort of, you know, keep communication with their comrades while they were in exile or in a prison. And then it sort of just spread throughout Europe as the rise of fascism was going on in the early 20th century. And in the U.S., we know that it started somewhere in the 80s, I believe in L.A., but I'm not exactly sure. And since the 80s in the U.S., I think that we have upwards of 25 or even more than 30 distinct chapters in the United States.
Damn, I didn't know it was that big. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about your opinion about the term political prisoner. I've heard like somewhat divergent opinions on that specific term, as being like maybe a useful distinction on the one hand to sort of talk about like anarchistic or politicized prisoners, but on the other hand, the notion that like all prisoners are political, that idea. Maybe that might undermine it. What is your opinion on that? I myself don't super have one. I think that it has like a broad application of uses personally.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's such a great question, and one that a lot of folks who are part of ABC chapters have asked of themselves and of each other in the past few years. I mean, there used to be a very strict line of who would fall into the political camp and who was not political, and that seemed to be a bigger rift in the United States in the 90s and maybe even into the early 2000s. What I've witnessed in conversations and also in the past years at this North American ABC conference is that there's a broadening of the term. And it's sort of being opened up and applied to people who aren't, you know, necessarily in prison because of a quote unquote political action. And so, yeah, it seems that people are a lot more receptive to understanding how criminalization affects us all and affects communities differently. And, you know, some folks get heavily politicized while in prison. And I think that they're at a sort of critical breaking point, right? Just by being imprisoned, they're experiencing some of the harshest control tactics that this state has in trying to, you know, subdue prisoners. And so those folks are acutely aware of how, you know, their lives are political. And I think that increasingly ABC folks are recognizing that and also providing, you know, different literature and just having conversations with folks who didn't necessarily land in prison because of a political action, but are increasingly seeing themselves as a political subject.
That's really, really interesting. Thank you for talking about that. That like makes me think about so many things about, or like so many things about how the changing, you know, opinion or visibility of like this like prisoner industrial complex problem is like becoming more visible in the U.S. right now. So yeah, thanks for talking about that. Like we mentioned a little bit before, there's going to be an ABC conference happening in Denver. And there has been a, you know, as many of our listeners will be aware, there has been a nationwide prison strike happening for the past 4 weeks now, as of this conversation. How do you see the ongoing organizing around the prison strike informing the ABC conference?
Yeah, so there is a lot of energy behind that right now, which is amazing and great and historic, clearly. So, yeah, like I said, in the past few years at the ABC conference, we've had more and more dialogues about, you know, including quote unquote non-political folks into the fold and, considering them as valid contributors to some of the bigger discussions we have about the prison industrial complex. And so for this conference, we do have folks holding a panel about the prison strike, and we have solicited letters and words from people who are imprisoned, some of them engaging in the strike, some of them not. But, you know, this is a huge moment right now. We have a lot of energy behind this strike. And so we see this as an opportunity for folks to network with each other and to exchange information and to share tactics and strategies about communicating with prison rebels and also emboldening rebels to, you know, continue to take these actions, because we don't see September 9th as just sort of one day. We hope that this continues forward. So hopefully we'll, you know, sort of re-inspire folks if they've lost a little bit of momentum. But yeah, we see this as incredibly useful for the cause.
Definitely. And to have like an anarchist Black Cross conference now, like at this sort of crucial point in the prison strike, like you said, energy might be flagging, people's spirits might be low. So I think it's really cool that it's happening right now. And that's a kind of a coincidence maybe. But I like it.
Yeah, it was a coincidence.
So I think I was just about to ask you, what is a rough schedule of events this year, and what is something that you're most excited about happening at the conference?
Sure. So the conference takes place over a three-day period, and so we've got a lot of panels and workshops and anti-oppression exercises planned. I don't know, what I'm really excited about it is this year we have someone from the Prison Ecology Project talking about eco-liberation efforts and how that intersects with the prison system, and specifically how prisons are often built on or near industrial waste sites. So that's really going to be great, I think. Also, Portland ABC is going to be talking about the white supremacist problem in prisons and how to sort of combat that issue in terms of corresponding to prisoners and trying to do cross-racial organizing. And we have some folks talking about, again, you know, this idea of expanding our understanding of politicization and what is political, and sort of linking the strategies that we have for supporting prison rebels with our strategies for supporting political prisoners who have been doing this for, you know, 30, 40 years. So we have a lot of exciting stuff.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I had a question or like maybe a thought about the problem of white supremacy in prison. And I understand it's a huge problem, but I also understand that and I've never been to prison, so this is speaking entirely secondhand, but I understand that prison society can be very, very, very different than societies outside of prison walls. And sometimes people choose to associate themselves with groups or gangs or whatever, white supremacist gangs who wouldn't normally do that. And, you know, in thinking about their own safety or whatever. So I would be really, really interested to hear what the Portland ABC has to say about that. And I'm not in any way condoning white supremacy, because I think no matter where it is, it's fucked up. But I would be really interested to hear their take on it. And I wonder if you had any thoughts on that, just informally.
Well, yeah. I guess I don't really deal with this in my direct prisoner support efforts. So I have some thoughts about it. I mean, I'm very, very uncomfortable with engaging with out and out white supremacists unless they're, you know, totally disavowing the Aryan Brotherhood. I'm also interested in hearing that workshop because I have a lot to learn too. And this is the amazing thing about the conference is that there's so much information sharing that really benefits us all and really enhances our personal work.
So the last question that I have is the registration for this particular ABC conference is closed. But how can people keep tabs on ABC activity in their areas? And how can people maybe donate, you mentioned donating to specific ABCs previously in the interview. How can people do that if they should choose to?
Yeah, so the first thing to do is to find out if your area has an Anarchist Black Cross chapter. And, you know, I think a quick internet search should be able to find that out, or, you know, talking with organizers in your area. And if there isn't a chapter, you know, starting an ABC is actually easy, relatively easy. You just need a few folks, and hopefully, you know, if you can get into contact with folks who are already doing ABC organizing, that would be great. And there are a couple of chapters that have a strong online presence. One is Denver Anarchist Black Cross, and the other one is New York City Anarchist Black Cross. So you can find a list of political prisoners and their, you know, names, numbers, and addresses, so you can start writing to them. So that's the sort of first step I would take. In terms of supporting the fundraiser, Adrian, I have to be honest, I don't know about that.
Thank you so much for talking with me on The Final Straw. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I mean, freedom to political prisoners and freedom to all prisoners.
Agreed. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. Also, if you're interested in rebroadcasting any episode or segment of the show, you're free to do so. Just send us an email so we know you're out there. If you care to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. You can find a sample of Firestorm's catalog of books and zines, plus a full calendar of events at their website, firestorm.coop.